Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of Azure Loves Open Source. This is a great series on TechNet Radio. We started one, the last episode was mainly an overview of everything open source in Azure. Just a little bit about who's all on the call today. I'm Tommy Patterson from the Southeast, out of the Atlanta area, senior technical evangelist, where I go around and speak at events, and I write on the blog posts and TechNet and that kind of thing. MySQL, I think, is one of the ones that always comes up. I think it's part of almost any default installation these days, especially in a Linux solution, that you can try a MySQL database to handle the application. So what we're going to do today is focus on just the MySQL components in Azure, not just in IaaS, but also in a platform as a service. Joining me is Keith Mayer. I don't think he needs any introduction, but he's been on probably, 100 Technic Radios. But Keith, tell us a little bit about yourself and, kind of your background.
Hey, Tommy. Hey, everybody. Hey, thanks for inviting me on today's show. Hi, everyone. As Tommy said, my name is Keith Mayer. I'm a partner technical evangelist at Microsoft here in the U.S., based in Columbus, Ohio, as a technical advisor to our cloud-based ISV partners, our third-party partners that are developing their solutions in the cloud. And really excited to be here today. I think MySQL is definitely an exciting topic in the open source world, and definitely excited to see some of the great support we have for it and be able to show that off today on Azure.
So you want to dive in, look at the options?
Yeah, definitely. Let's take a look at some of the options across the board with Azure for hosting MySQL, both from an IaaS standpoint and as a PaaS standpoint. So here we are looking at the Microsoft Azure Preview Portal, the new portal. And as we had talked about, we've got a variety of different ways of very quickly hosting MySQL on top of Azure, depending on the level of customization and control that's really needed and how quickly you want to get that spun up. If we, right on our main start board of the Azure Preview Portal, if we drill into the marketplace, we'll see that there's really a number of different ways that we can spin up MySQL. If we wanted to do it more from an IaaS perspective, using infrastructure as a service, we can drill into one of our VM images or upload a custom image. And those VM images could be based on a variety of things. You know, it could be just out of the box a base Linux image, you know, maybe a SUSE or CentOS or Ubuntu or Oracle Linux or whatnot, where we want to have kind of the ultimate control over that environment. We're going to spin up a base Linux VM on one of those distros and do all the configuration, customization, and installation of the MySQL packages ourselves. So that's certainly one way of going. In addition to these base Linux distro platform images, though, within this same Azure marketplace, we've got a variety of open source partners that also provide their own prepackaged images to make it really simple to spin up new Linux workloads for LAMP stack applications or even specific applications on top of a LAMP stack like WordPress or various CMS systems or whatnot. And so right from our Azure Marketplace site, if we were looking to spin up maybe a VM that already had all the LAMP stack components kind of pre-built, let's just do a search for LAMP, and you'll see that, well, when we're spinning up VMs, we've got a variety of choices across various Linux distros. You know, there's Ubuntu and CentOS-based LAMP stack images from one of our partners like Bitnami. We've got Brandu that has a full WordPress stack with MySQL incorporated into that. Cognosys that has Drupal and LAMP servers on OpenLogic, on Ubuntu, on a variety of different distros, all kind of pre-configured. So depending on the level of initial customization that we want, even in the IaaS world, it can be really simple to get started with MySQL. But beyond that, as we start thinking about platform as a service, we see a lot of interest in MySQL around platform as a service, because while our developers out in the community may want to use an open source platform for developing their solution, they may not want the ongoing management associated with a VM-based solution in the cloud on any cloud platform to be part of that ongoing hassle that they have to manage and maintain themselves. So from a platform as a service solution, if we just pop back over to the Azure portal, over in our marketplace list, you'll see as we scroll down here that in addition to virtual machines, we have a variety of other platform services. And so under our data category for data and analytics, if we click on that, as we scroll down, you'll see a variety of different data platform-based services that can be very quickly spun up. So if we scroll down a little bit, you'll see that, in fact, for MySQL, we actually have a platform as a service that's hosted by ClearDB, one of our Azure Marketplace partners, where they're providing a scalable MySQL platform service that has performance and storage and high availability all baked right into it. And so as you scroll through the process of spinning up this MySQL environment, instead of having to worry about any of the underlying operating system configuration, you're basically just specifying a particular tier of service based on the total number of connections, based on the database size, based on SLA and backup and I/O needs, for instance, and it's all going to be spun up behind the scenes as a MySQL managed environment that you have basically an endpoint that your application will connect to, just as if it was a MySQL database running inside your own Linux VM. So ClearDB is a great option for those situations where you want MySQL as part of your solution, but you don't want the ongoing administration of a VM environment for MySQL to be part of that solution. And then in addition, I'm sorry, go ahead, Tommy.
The cool thing with that ClearDB is even the free, the smaller version, the free edition, comes with your backup and restore capabilities in a management UI or web interface, so you can at least see when all the backups were taken and they're automated. So that's pretty cool. It's like a bonus that I would think would be something you pay for and actually comes with it. So that's pretty neat.
Exactly. It's part of the package with that. And then in working a little further with ClearDB as our MySQL platform provider on Azure, platform as a service provider on Azure, we've also got packaged options that package up our Azure website's web application PaaS service with the MySQL ClearDB offering. If we drill into web, for instance, and this is really of interest to a lot of open source developers because, as we said, one of the real common use cases for MySQL is as part of a web-based LAMP stack type application. A web-based app might be written on Tomcat or PHP or something like that. Our Azure website's web platform can support all of those common open source web development platform stacks. And so as we drill down through our various web application services, you'll see that there's a pre-built, templatized deployment for platform as a service that gives a website and MySQL kind of a very easy to manage two-tier web application, data-driven web application platform service. And then we also have other templates that incorporate MySQL for applications on top of Azure websites like WordPress or Umbraco or whatnot, where there's still a MySQL component that gets provisioned, but it's getting provisioned as part of an overall web application template that's built on top of Azure websites. So I know a lot of times when people are thinking about open source solutions in the cloud, a lot of times they gravitate towards running Linux VMs in the cloud, which you can certainly do on Azure, and we'll be talking more about that in the rest of our session. But I did want to call out the great platform as a service features as well, because it's been my experience that that can really help to accelerate the ability to deliver new solutions and updates to those solutions more quickly by having the dev team, the solution delivery team, focusing on the solution itself, rather than on managing the underlying operating system environment that a bunch of VMs are running for you. Does that make sense from your standpoint, Tommy? Are you seeing some of the same interest from the open source community as well?
Certainly, and it's good to point out too. I mean, like we talked about, the WordPress comes with it built in to roll out a MySQL database with it. But however, you could, when you're going through the wizard to deploy, you can say, you know what, I want to use a SQL database, or I want to use an existing MySQL database that I have somewhere else. So it kind of makes it sound like it's packaged all together and that's hard-coded, but it's really not.
Right.
It's packaged together with a wizard so you can kind of go the way you want to go. ClearDB is a great choice in that wizard, but it is there. A lot of people take to that because of the ease of use. You mentioned a lot of the different languages and platforms that you may have to learn about or code about, But in these cases, you can roll these websites out with zero code knowledge and get started.
Yeah, so, definitely. And for those of you that might be interested in learning more about the open source potential around Azure websites from a web perspective, stay tuned in our series, because we have another episode coming up where we'll be deep diving into Azure websites in more detail. Whereas today's episode, we're going to try to focus the rest of it around just MySQL, just the database piece from an open source on Azure perspective.
Yep. So there's a lot of great options, Keith. I know there's a lot of Linux shops that want to do deeper customization. We're going to talk about those. But when you're getting started with MySQL on Azure IaaS, there's got to be some things you need to think about before you even start rolling out, right? There's some prerequisites that you need to plan for to make sure you do it optimally. So you want to walk through those?
Yeah, definitely. And some of them are very similar to some of the same types of prerequisites that you might look to plan for, even in an on-premises environment with MySQL, just with kind of a cloud tint to them from an Azure perspective. So one of the aspects that you might want to think about is, for most MySQL application solutions, it's more than just a single VM, right? Oftentimes it's, perhaps a 2 or 3 tier application that might involve multiple VMs for the web and app tier components internally talking across a network connection to MySQL, or in a highly available configuration, you may have multiple VMs running MySQL and using, perhaps DRBD or Percona or Galera as a MySQL-type clustering solution. And so one of the first things that I usually recommend is thinking about networking first and creating an Azure virtual network that can be used to set up that internal communication, so you're not having to expose all of your internal traffic over the public internet. And right from the portal, as you go into your new marketplace area, you'll see a variety of options in the preview portal. Unfortunately, in this new preview portal, virtual networking isn't quite there yet. And so in order to be able to access Azure Virtual Networks, we'd want to go right from the start board of our preview portal over to this other Azure portal link, which will switch us over to the current GA portal, the current production portal. So now we're over in the production portal. And over in the production portal, we can click on Networks in our Virtual Networks page. And if I drop down to the bottom, we can just really quickly and easily set up a new cloud-based Azure Virtual Network that'll provide a simple networking environment for multiple VMs running Linux to be able to communicate across the network with one another. So I'm just going to use the Quick Create option, and we can key in a descriptive name. So I know what the network is all about, so I'll give it a name. I can pick an address space of IP addresses, specify how many virtual machines I'd like to have on that virtual network, and then pick a location. Where in the world do I want to run my new Linux VMs that will be placed on this virtual network? I can optionally also specify a DNS server. If I had my own DNS servers that I was managing for my application environment, or if I select none, then all of the VMs that are placed in this virtual network by default will be pre-configured to do DNS lookups against the Azure public DNS servers for public name resolution. Ultimately, my Azure subscription, so if I'm managing different subscriptions for production versus internal versus dev and test, I can select the appropriate subscription. Once I'm done, I go ahead and click Create, and boom, I've got my new virtual network all set up and ready to go. So that's kind of the first step. I would get your networking set up first so that you can make sure as you're provisioning multiple VMs that they're placed on a virtual network that allows them to communicate with one another. The second step is probably more around storage, right? And so just like in a on-prem environment, we'd want to make sure that we have a spot in Azure for storing our MySQL data disks, our virtual hard disks that are supporting our MySQL Linux VMs.
Yeah, and so one thing to the networking before we jump off of that.
Yeah, definitely, sure.
So if we go and if we did a quick create in this particular exercise, but one of the questions you might be asking is, well, is it secure? Is it behind a firewall? How do I access it from my network at on-prem? If you're enterprise and you've got your own data centers, the custom create of the virtual networking and configuration tab will let you go in and say, hey, let's set up a virtual private network. They'll also let you set up different subnets within that virtual networking space, and then you can kind of segregate out which pieces of your solution can see one another with ACLs and whatnot. So because we're not going real detailed into networking today, I just want to point that out.
Yep, definitely. And as Tommy, as you were talking, I just clicked into the details of one of my existing virtual networks that was set up with QuickCreate. And one of the benefits is that you can start off real simple, all up in the cloud, create your virtual network with QuickCreate, and then drill into the details of it, come down to the Configure tab, and always be able to fill out some of those more advanced properties around DNS servers, point-to-site or site-to-site connectivity, or if you wanted to split out multiple subnets and create a separate subnet for web versus app versus data, you can modify and extend your virtual network with all that information after the fact as well. Yep, definitely. Great Very points. Cool. Yeah.
So storage is a big part of the foundation. We have to cover that too.
Definitely.
So sorry about the interruption there, but I just want to point that out. So let's talk about storage and how that interaction takes place, what we can do to create the right area for our virtual machines or data or whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right, storage is a big area because many MySQL database applications, like databases in general, may be running high throughput, high transaction, OLTP type databases, or have hundreds or thousands of concurrent user connections. That's really causing a lot of read and write I.O. to the storage subsystem. And so the storage conversation or the storage planning, I look at kind of in twofold. One is making sure that at a fabric level, we have a spot in Azure to provide a storage repository for our MySQL database data on one or more virtual hard disks. And then the other piece of that, when we're configuring MySQL inside of Linux IaaS VMs, is making sure that the VMs themselves have the virtual hard disk configuration they need for storage capacity and throughput as well, both from a capacity and performance standpoint. So the first part of that two-part planning step is configuring the storage fabric. And so in the Azure portal, we could do that just by going over to our storage page and going down over under our new area. And similarly to what we did with networking, we can do a quick create on storage, give our storage account a new name, and specify again where in the world we wish that storage to be located, and optionally determine if we want to turn on geo-replication or not to provide additional disaster recovery capabilities. Whether or not we use geo-replication, even if we're just using locally redundant storage. So when we're creating the storage fabric, our storage repository in Azure, we'll just go down to our storage page and click on the new button and use our quick create option to quickly set up a storage account using a very similar form to what we used on the networking side. So I'm going to key in a real simple name here for our new storage account, just to give it a name. Specify that I wish to have my storage in the same data center region as where my virtual network was previously created. And then you'll see we've got several replication options, ranging from locally redundant to geo-redundant to zone redundant. So locally redundant is an option that provides, by default, at a broad level, within a single Azure data center, so in our case, our East U.S. region, synchronous triple writes of every single block of data that's recorded into that Azure storage account. It's synchronously recorded across three separate physical disks for every block of data, so that if there's any physical disk failures, the storage account itself has really strong durability to be able to self-heal and recover from any physical disk failures and auto-spare and all that good stuff. But if we wanted to also have at a storage level, our storage provide additional disaster recovery capabilities, that's where our other replication options come in. Geo-redundant, for instance, gives us the ability to asynchronously replicate, in addition to the three local copies of every block of data that's written to our Azure storage, geo-replication gives us the ability to asynchronously replicate to a remote Azure data center region that's hundreds of miles away. So if there's a regional disaster, we still have all of our data safely recorded asynchronously to a remote data center region. And so I bring these options up because at a storage level, we've got really strong durability and high availability of the storage subsystem itself, so that in a, you know, in a typical MySQL environment, as you're thinking about your disks inside of your virtual machine, you may not need to plan for additional levels of like mirroring or whatnot, because the storage system's already doing that for you. So we'll go ahead and create a new storage account. We can do that just by clicking on Create Storage Account. And once that's created, it's right there as a storage account that we can now place virtual machines on top of and have their virtual hard disk storing their data in that storage account. But as we said, there's a part two of the conversation as well, right, with storage, because we've got our storage account built. The storage account itself provides a very highly scalable repository on Azure. Can scale, each storage account can scale up to 500 terabytes of usable storage on Azure. And it can, one storage account can handle up to 20,000 transactions per second. So a huge amount of scalability. But as we're putting our virtual machine hard disks on top of that storage account, we want to make sure that we're planning appropriately for that as well. And a lot of that has to do with the size of the virtual machine instances that you're using for your Linux VMs that are running MySQL. So I'm going to switch over to one of the links that's at the bottom of the page for today's episode on virtual machine sizes with Azure. And you'll see that we've got a few different categories. We've got A series, D series, DS series, G series. And as you scroll through those various sizes, you'll see that based on the size of a virtual machine, there's a different number of maximum data disks that we can attach to that virtual machine. So as we scale up to larger size VMs, we have the ability to scale out to more data disks. Each of those data disks can be up to a terabyte in size. And so if we needed either more than a single than 1 terabyte of data space, we could use multiple data disks, or if we needed higher performance, for our standard storage, each data disk provides up to 500 IOPS of storage. So by having multiple data disks and using a technique inside of our VMs at the Linux level that combines those data disks together, like LDM, you know, logical device manager spanning type solution, or a multi-disk kind of software RAID solution, kind of like a RAID 0 solution, we can combine multiple data disks together into one logical file system structure that we mount on our Linux VM to provide a large amount of capacity with very high performance.
And it's important to note that the disks we're talking about are purely the data disks that you add after you created the virtual machine, because the OS disks that come with the virtual machine plus temporary disks that come with the virtual machines, those are not guaranteed to hold data, right? So you, especially the temporary disks, you definitely don't want to put anything on that, because every time the machine reboots, it's going to start fresh. So what some people have done is maybe script their temp tables and stuff like that to go on the temporary disk, but be careful with that. And these disks, when it says 16, that means 16 disks that you've added doesn't count the OS and doesn't count the temp space.
Yep. And that you'll see the size of the temporary disk that you're referencing, Tommy, called out in the table as well. As you mentioned, it is temporary, non-persistent. In the Linux VM space, this temporary disk is actually mounted as your kind of like your MNT mount point, your temporary mount point in your root file system. So that's how you would access that, but definitely for non-persistent needs. And as you scroll up here, you'll see for the A-series size VMs, we have a maximum of 16 data disks that we can attach. But as we scroll up to our larger series, like our D-series that have local temporary SSD disks, well, we can attach up to 32 data disks, so up to 32 terabytes or up to 16,000 IHOPS worth of performance. But it gets better with the DS-series. We can leverage our premium storage, which is a new persistent SSD-based storage offering for very high capacity with very high throughput. And so if you have a very heavy IOPS need, that premium storage gives you the ability to scale out to 50,000 IOPS for a single file system volume that's being stretched across, you know, potentially 32 virtual disks. And if you need even more space than that, well, our new G-series that was just announced this week, that we're recording this episode has the ability to mount up to 64 virtual disks for up to 64 terabytes within a file system structure. If you need more than that, we definitely have third-party partnerships with some cloud storage vendors through our ExpressRoute program, like Zedera and EMC and NetApp, that can provide even higher capacity, higher throughput, iSCSI SAN-based storage in the cloud using Azure.
Absolutely. So really cool, the G-Series just being announced as available. We talked about it a number of months ago. These are highly dedicated machines. So if you're going that route, make sure you understand the cost of that and what are the implications behind it. But it's definitely the most power and most performance we've unleashed to date. Very cool. So after storage, we've got networking figured out. We've got storage figured out. Now, what other considerations do you think? What else should we talk about today, Keith, before we just start using virtual machines?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So once we've got our VM size figured out and we build a new VM using the steps that we went through in our first episode together, right, to build a new Linux VM, we still have a little bit more work to do on the storage side because we'll probably, if we're using multiple virtual hard disks, we'll probably want to attach those additional virtual hard disks to our storage, to our VM, and then within our Linux VM, through perhaps an SSH session, be able to configure those as a striped software RAID device that we can place a file system on top of. And so if we go back over to our Azure portal, I'm just going to browse out to one of my existing VMs that we provisioned in our first episode together. And as we move over there, I just wanted to show everyone where we can go in our preview portal to be able to add additional disks or see the virtual hard disks that are currently attached. So remember, every virtual machine, as you said, every virtual machine you spin up automatically has an OS disk and a temporary disk. But if we scroll down a bit here, we'll see that we've got a disks tile that shows us how many total disks. Now, it doesn't show the temporary disk in this count. It shows me 3 here. So I've got 1 OS disk and then 2 additional data disks that I added already. And I added those just by clicking on that tile and attaching new data disks. When I click attach new data disk, I can specify a name and a size and then a host caching policy. Now, typically for MySQL databases that are heavily transactional, we'll use the host caching policy of none. And that just makes sure that any write requests that are being written are immediately flushed through to our underlying Azure storage file system. So once we've done that, you'll see those disks attached. So I've got 2 terabyte disks that are attached. And then it's really connecting in through SSH into our Linux VM to finish out the configuration. So if I switch over here to my my PuTTY session, I'm just going to scroll up here a bit. And we can kind of follow through with this session as to what I did to configure this so we don't have to take time with the actual disk configuration in our session today. But I logged in through my PuTTY session as my root equivalent user. And the first thing I did is I went through and did an update to make sure that I had all the latest versions of the packages that I had installed. And that went through and did my update. And then I installed the specific package for doing software RAID. So in my Linux environment, I was using MDADM, the administration tool for multi-disk devices. So I went ahead and installed that. And that went through several pages of information to install that. And then I had to, I wanted to see what the disk devices were for the raw disks that I attached into Linux, right? So I could know which disk devices I want to build as a multi-disk RAID array. And so depending on your distro of Linux, you can find that information in your log files. If you're running CentOS or various distros, you can do a grep on SCSI against your Virlog messages log. Or if you're running on Ubuntu like I am in my environment, you can do a grep on SCSI against the syslog file. And you'll see that it shows me 4 SCSI attached devices. So this SDA device, that's my operating system disk. SDB, that's my temp disk. And then the 2 additional data disks that I added, well, that's SDC and SDD as my 2 additional disk devices. So then I just go through and create partitions on each of those, so on SDC and SDD. So I just went through the process of doing a normal FDisk, creating a new partition. And as part of my FDisk support, I specified, I switched the partition type over to software RAID using the FD type. So I just made sure that that was switched over. I did the same thing for my second disk, the SDD device, my second disk device. And then once we've gotten through that process, well, we can go ahead and make sure that we write those changes out through FDisk so that it syncs those down to our disk and does a reread of the partition table. And then we're ready for MD-ADM to create our multi-disk device. So I just double-checked first to make sure I didn't have any multi-disk devices that were already set up. I didn't. And then I used MD-ADM to create a new multi-disk device using RAID 0. Now, I know a lot of you are kind of cringing, saying, why use RAID 0? There's no redundancy. But remember, at a storage level, Azure Storage already provides synchronous multi-writes across even locally redundant storage accounts. So there's really no reason in most cases to do like RAID 1 or RAID 10 for a MySQL environment. And I only have two disks, so I'm striping across just two RAID devices, and I gave it my RAID device names. So it went through and created that. And then I just made a file system on top of that. So I did a makefs, made a file system on top of it, and then mounted it up. So I mounted it up. I edited my FS tab to make sure that my FS tab file had my new file system set up as a auto mount file system, and mounted it, forced it to mount all the auto mount file systems using a mount A, and then just confirmed with the mount command that my new file system is now mounted. As we scroll down here through our output, devmd1 is now mounted on data. So we've got that mounted. And you'll see right above that, remember we were talking about our temp file system. So that SDB device, first partition on that temp file system, or that temp disk device, is auto-mounted as MNT. So that's how that breaks out from that standpoint. So at this point, we're kind of ready with our storage. We're ready for the next step of actually moving forward with getting MySQL built on top of it. Does that make sense from your standpoint so far, Tommy?
Yep. So we're probably not going to show the ifconfigs for the network pieces, but an IP address will be assigned, or you could static assign one through the preview portal, depending on what you're building out. So we're not going to show that piece today, but that would be defined already. So the storage is taken care of. And now it's time to install MySQL, right? Or
yep.
Turn it on, depending on what you've rolled out. It may be in the image okay already.
Yeah, definitely. And so the NIC support that you mentioned actually brings up a good point. Perhaps before we install MySQL, is that in some environments, a multi-tiered application, you may have multiple NICs on your MySQL VMs, right? You may have a need where you're trying to divide out the data plane and the app or web traffic planes across separate NICs, or you may have maybe a clustering scenario where you want different types of traffic from your application versus replication to go over different NICs. One of the new features that we've added in Azure is the ability to expose multiple NICs to Linux and Windows VMs that are running on Azure. Now, depending on the size of your VM, and we'll include a link to this page that I'm showing down at the bottom of our episode page today so that you have it handy as well. But depending on the size of your VM, that determines how many maximum NICs are allowed. And the multi-NIC configuration does have to be done through the command line when you're configuring. It's not exposed through the Azure portal yet. But you'll see that you can, depending on your VM size, have a maximum of up to 4 individual NICs. Now, the additional NICs that you configure, you'll want to check inside your Linux distro, inside your VM, to see if they're auto set up or not. Some of the distros are packaged so that they'll auto-detect the additional NICs and set them up for DHCP. Others, you may have to do some of the ifconfig type work that Tommy was mentioning to expose those as additional interfaces and configure them for DHCP so that they receive an address from the Azure Virtual Network that they can communicate over. Yep, so that's a really good point, Tommy. Yeah. And then after that, yeah, absolutely. We're ready to kind of get all set up with our MySQL environment. And there's a great article that we'll include a link to at the bottom of our page today on creating a LAMP stack environment on Linux VMs on Azure that does a great walkthrough of much of what we've been talking about over the last few steps of SSHing into your VMs after it's created and preparing your virtual machine for the LAMP stack bits and then actually installing the LAMP stack bits as well. And certainly some of those install instructions may vary a bit based on your Linux OS distribution. But this this page actually has the steps for the common ones like CentOS or SUSE or Ubuntu or whatnot for being able to do that. In our environment, we're using Ubuntu. So if I switch back over, in Ubuntu, I'm going to use TaskCell to actually do the setup of all of my LAMP components. It makes it really easy, actually, in Ubuntu to get up and running with an environment super quick. So I'm first going to install that. And then once that's installed, as I scroll down here, you'll see that the next step I did is I basically ran, after TaskCell installs, TaskCell install LAMP server. And that goes through the process of installing not just MySQL, but Apache and PHP, all of the LAMP components as well as MySQL. And it gives us a default MySQL config file that we can go in and edit and point things like perhaps the data directory over to our slash data file system that we've mounted or do any tuning that's necessary based on our MySQL application needs. But makes it super easy to get up and running once your storage and networking and VM environment is all set to support that. You'll see down at the bottom, we've got just did a quick netstat and grepped on MySQL, and you'll see it's up and running and listening for inbound connection requests.
Very cool. And you can tell just from watching this session what all is involved with standing up just a single virtual machine. I mean, you can go back to the physical server days, and there was definitely a whole lot more involved than this, but there's still quite a bit. So you can see now why so many Linux administrators and or sysadmins have decided to go down the automation route with different configuration or management tools to hold those configurations. We won't cover those today because we want to talk about the base of how to get to this point if you were to manually go through the steps. So very, very cool. Last piece we want to talk about, you said there were some ways of doing high availability, Keith, and you want to touch on those?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and high availability of a data tier within an application is super important, right? You know, a lot of environments really depend on having their mission critical or business critical applications hitting MySQL for the back-end database. And so with MySQL on Azure, we have a couple different ways of being able to support that through common Linux and MySQL clustering technologies. So for MySQL, if you're looking at a highly available kind of master slave or active passive configuration, you'd set up two MySQL instances, and then you could use DRBD and Corasync and Pacemaker to be able to create a basic active-passive replicated environment that if the first VM or the MySQL instance inside of it should go down for any reason, it can automatically fail over to the other. If you're interested in more of a multi-master, active-active configuration, we do also have supported configurations for getting things like Galera or Percona extra DB clusters running as active-active configurations on top of Azure inside Linux VMs as well. And the page that I'm showing right now actually is a great step-by-step guide that focuses on the first option that we talked about on using DRBD to replicate between two MySQL VMs, and then Corasync and Pacemaker to provide the clustering infrastructure and heartbeat detection to do the automatic failover. And then soon through our blogging community and others within the organization, you'll see similar step-by-steps rolling out for multi-master configurations as well, using Galera or Percona or other solutions. So definitely some great easy to implement options for high availability of MySQL on top of Azure.
Very, very cool. We covered a lot of ground. There's a lot that you can do with this. Of course, we just scratched the surface. I think it's been a fantastic episode, Keith. Any other closing thoughts?
So there's, as you said, there's lots of options to think through when you're thinking about MySQL on top of Azure, both from an IaaS and a PaaS standpoint. So a lot of the deep customization and tuning that's available for running MySQL on top of Azure and in an IaaS VM environment. And we also showed some of the easy options for getting up and running really quickly if you don't need heavy levels of customization and you're interested in just a very scalable, highly available platform as a service solution. So I'd encourage you to think about those and then definitely leverage the additional resources that we've got located down at the bottom of the page today to step through it in your own environment. Try Azure out. You can sign up for our free trial. Step through building out your own Linux environment and let us know what you think. Feel free to go ahead and tweet to us on Twitter and let us know either through the TN Radio hashtag or through Tommy or my Twitter hashtags, account tags, and we'd be happy to hear more about what you're doing with open source on Azure too.
Absolutely. You can always check on Keith's blog or my blog at virtuallycloud9.com. There's walkthrough guides on how to get started with Azure. I just did a series with the different distros, so Ubuntu and Core, Cint, and SUSE, on how to get one rolled out. Very similar to what we just did on the call today, except for I didn't go into the MySQL bits, so I kind of left it as generic. And Keith Mayer's got plenty of walkthroughs, especially around automation and Linux. So make sure you check those out. Check out the links below. And thanks for joining today.